Professor Roger Yates from UCD. He's a professor on UCD. And we've got Bernie Wright here from Alliance of for Animal Rights. And we've got Rod as well for Vegan Ireland.
That's right, yeah. Hi, lads.
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Right, so good afternoon, everyone. We've got a bit of an agenda today. We're going to show you a short PowerPoint, and obviously the remit that we were given was that you wanted to focus on the issue of fur and fur farming in Ireland. But the PowerPoint is going to put that into some context, just in terms of being able to talk about it in a wider sense. As you can see, the main group here really is the Education Outreach Group, but it's in association with Our Liberation, and who have a fur expert. Unfortunately, he's got flu, so he's not here, but with us in spirit, that's Edmund Long. So that's our agenda then, a little bit of context in a sense. We're going to show you a couple of bits of film as well, which were shown taken in Ireland. Both of them were kind of taken undercover, so the fur farmers, as it were, didn't know they were being filmed. One of them shows the slaughter of minks. It's very difficult to see. I'm just going to show you a couple of minutes of that and then show you the other one, which will last for about 9 minutes, I think. So it goes. So, context then. The first context that we want to talk about is the theoretical one. Now, these are probably phrases that you're familiar with, the notion of animal rights and the notion of animal welfare. Okay, but they actually mean very different things. There are philosophies behind both of those. Okay, now, the basic idea, you could say, is that animal rights is about use, the use of animals, and animal welfare is about the treatment of animals while they're being used. So that's essentially the difference. What does that mean?
It's officially the start.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Quite right. We should have one of those at UCD. So in terms of the written philosophies of these ideas, the very famous book came out in 1975 called Animal Liberation, by an Australian philosopher called Peter Singer, who's very famous for his work on human rights as well. And he is not a rights theorist. He's a utilitarian, which means that you talk about balancing good and bad and so forth. The main animal rights philosopher in our movement is called Tom Reagan. And in 1985, he wrote a book called The Case for Animal Rights, where he spelt out the reason why we should regard other animals, as well as ourselves, as rights bearers, and that what humans do to them routinely in terms of farming, in terms of fur farming, etc., etc., they are regarded as rights violations. Okay, so that's the kind of theoretical landscape that we need to be aware of, at least, to be able to understand this issue. As I said, the animal rights people will say that we don't have the right to use other animals. Animal welfareists tend to say we can use other animals so long as we treat them okay. So that's to do with treatment and use. That's the kind of basic difference, if you like. Okay, I just want to also do some context in relation to numbers. First of all, I want to look at Ireland and then look globally. So again, this is context of animal use in general, and then we're going to focus on fur. So the first item here, I know it's a little bit small to you, so I'll read out the numbers. We're talking about live exports. This first item here is live exports. These are the live animals that are sent abroad for various reasons, into veal crates or into other fattening units, etc., etc., etc. And we're talking about in excess of 160,000 animals per year going out of Ireland. The next line is very recent in the sense it came from The Independent, and it was published, in fact, on the 15th of this month, and he was talking about the numbers of cattle available for slaughter. And effectively, they're talking about there's going to be an increase in Ireland of cows who are going to be slaughtered in the next coming year. The only thing that is threatening this, apparently, is the fact that they're talking about reopening a live export market with Libya, and so that might cut down the numbers that are killed here. Now, that issue points out the difference between rights and welfare. Animal welfarists will often say that it's cruel to transport live animals abroad because it takes a long time, they go on ferries, on lorries for many, many hours. Okay, and they've got a slogan which is they want the meat on the hook and not on the hoof. So in other words, the animals should be killed in Ireland and then the meat sent over abroad. The problem with that, from the business point of view, is the fact that if you send Irish cattle to, say, France, put them in a field in France for a while, then they can sell that then as French beef. So that's the way it works. Also works the other way around. You can, in fact, there is, with this recent horse burger controversy, there was this issue that some meat was coming into Ireland and the Irish firms were adding breadcrumbs to it. And as soon as you did that, then you could claim it was an Irish product. So even though some consumers want to make sure that they're eating Irish, as it were, just by looking at the label, it says produced in Ireland, that might not necessarily be true. So there's quite a lot of kind of shenanigans, if you like, in that sense. So the Libyan issue might be opening, and that will threaten the numbers killed. Whoops, I shouldn't be doing that. Bring that back. Okay, the third lot there is breeding sows, so we're talking about pigs. So we're talking about 158,000 breeding sows. So that's not the piglets, that's just the mothers, often in intensive conditions, gestation crates, etc., etc. Those figures are for 2010, so they'll probably be a little bit higher than that. When we get to this line here, we're starting to go into chickens. And there is two different types of chickens, the ones who lay eggs and the ones who grow meat, essentially. So you may have heard of a system called the battery system, which is a cage system. And that was actually phased out in Ireland, although there were some problems with some farmers not complying. But that was phased out at the beginning of 2012. They've been replaced, the barren battery cages, the empty barren battery cages except for the hens, they've been replaced by what's called the enriched battery cage, which means that there's one perch, there's a little bit of a nesting box, which essentially is a couple of strips hanging down, and there's also a little area for them to scratch. So it's still a pretty kind of difficult position for hens. In fact, of all the animals that we exploit, it's the hens that we exploit the most. So 2.2 million egg-laying hens in Ireland. The big number, as the big number is everywhere, is the poultry, so-called, which are for meat. Now, there's a special name for that, which is called broiler chicken. Okay, usually they're slaughtered at something like 40, 50 days old. So when you see a chicken in the supermarket, you're looking at a very young animal. Okay, so worldwide then, we're talking about something like 20 billion broiler chickens exist. In terms of Ireland, it's the biggest amount that we have in this country, which is 80 million. Some estimates put it to 85 million poultry in Ireland. And finally, we get to the fur issues, which are picked out there in yellow. I know that it's quite difficult to see from the back there, probably. But effectively, that's saying that there are 5 licensed mink farms in Ireland. And there are estimations of their production, something from 200,000 to something like 225,000 minks per year. There used to be one fox farm in Ireland, but that is not operational We believe it still exists, but it's just not operating. The last time there's any figures about that was 2011. That doesn't necessarily mean that it was operating in 2011, it just means that that's when the Fox Furs were coming through into the market. So there is some kind of phasing out of the fox issue. There's a much bigger market for fur in Europe and a growing market for fur in China. And going back to the welfare issue, China have very lax animal welfare regulations. So Ireland is much better in that sense. And so if any of the trade goes from Ireland to China, then there is a welfare issue to that. As you probably know, there's lots of fishing goes on in Ireland. And so we've got this concept of fish farming now. So a lot of the fish that you see on your counters are from farms, but then there's also the free living ones as well. Now, the interesting thing about fishes is that they are calculated usually by their weight. They're not tend to be seen as individuals. And so this explains why. This is the stats for the for the fish farms. You're talking about something like 2.1 to 9.7 million fishes per year. But the weight is more stable, if you like. So the individuals might change. So that's the stats for the fish farms. This is the stats for the wild caught. So there's a lot of fishing going on. Worldwide, the figures of fishing per year are into the trillion. So there's real fears that we're literally emptying the ocean. And as people, conservationists point out, if the oceans die, then we die. It's a serious matter. It's one of the big issues that are connected to the idea of global warming, climate change, etc., etc. Okay, now we're into the global figures. So we're talking about something like 56 billion. This is land animals. So this is not including fishes and shellfishes, which, as I said, are in trillions. What that means on a kind of practical level, in the sense of getting our head around that, is that for every second, something like 3,000 animals are slaughtered. So as we're here now, every second that goes by, we're talking about 3,000. This is a very conservative estimate. There are other estimates that put this figure of something like 16,000 animals dying per second. So we're talking about a big industrial enterprise where we kill animals in great numbers. And in fact, it's the numbers that have led some people to talk about the animal holocaust. Now, that obviously, because of that name just in itself, is very controversial. Yeah. So to talk about the animal holocaust is quite a controversial thing. Some groups do that. There is phrases like the holocaust on your plate, for example. These three people openly talk about the animal holocaust. The top guy, and you pronounce that Stiebel, David Stiebel, he's a philosopher in Canada, I believe, and he's the only one of these who you could regard as an animal advocate. Okay, he's got something called the Holocaust Comparison Project, so if you want to check that out, which has got lots of pictures of the Holocaust and then what goes on with other animals, you can put his name in and put Holocaust comparison. If we go clockwise, this guy here is called Isaac Bashevis Singer, no relation to Peter Singer, and he was a Jew, and his family was victims of the Holocaust. He escaped, but his family were sent to concentration camps. And he effectively said in a novel that all people to the animals are Nazis, and that they live in an eternal Treblinka. And then finally, we have a neo-Marxist. This guy is called Adorno, Theodor Adorno. He was a German Jew, exiled from Germany when the Nazis took over. And he said this. He says, Auschwitz begins whenever someone looks at a slaughterhouse and thinks they are only animals. Which is very similar to something that Tolstoy said. Because Tolstoy said that as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields. In other words, as long as we act violently in our lives towards other animals, then we'll probably be acting violently in other ways. So the animal holocaust then, very controversial. There's one sense in which the holocaust analogy is not very accurate. Because as we probably know, what the Nazis were trying to do was eradicate the Jews and also other groups in society like gypsies and homosexuals and people that they regarded as inferior and disabled. What we do in terms of other animals is we don't want to eradicate them. In fact, we actually breed them to exploit them. So that's where the animal holocaust analogy kind of falls down a little bit. So this is artificial insemination. There's a big artificial insemination business in Ireland. This is the collection of semen from bulls, and this is what they do with it. This is a depiction of a cow's body, and effectively this is an arm in the anus of the cow, which is guiding the sperm going into the vagina. Okay. This issue is quite interesting. There's a big artificial insemination plant in Meath, just north of Dublin. On this occasion, what they've got here is some kind of frame in which the bull will mount, and then a guy, it's a great job to have, a guy comes running in with a kind of false condom, if you like, and puts it over the bull's penis until he ejaculates, and then they rush off to the lab and freeze it. So you can imagine, you know, the kind of conversation, what did you do today, Daddy, you know, when they get home, or something. Now, in Ireland, they don't do it this way. What they use in Ireland is so-called teaser bulls. So in other words, what they will do is they will get another bull and they will tether the bull to the floor so he can't move, and then they will get the other bull to mount the first bull. But before anything happens, they rush in again with the artificial vagina. Now, the reason they use teaser bulls, so-called, is because the bulls now are bred to be so big and so strong and so heavy that they can't actually use cows because the cows get crushed. So they actually can't mate naturally anymore. So they've got to have a teaser bull who is actually strong enough to take the weight of the first bull. This YouTube link, which we can make available to you, it will actually show you a Ear to the Ground program, which was about artificial insemination in Ireland, and you're probably familiar with that program. It's on our RTE, and we can make that available. But if you put in on a YouTube search artificial insemination Ireland, you'll get that film. It's about 10 minutes long. Okay, finally then we're going to focus on the third thing. This is just a reiteration of the stats that we saw before. The five farms, etc., etc. Now, the interesting thing to me, I'm a sociologist, I work at UCD, and one of my research interests is our perception of other animals. And one of the things that I often do when I'm giving a talk to members of the public, as opposed to animal advocates, is I will get them to draw a farm. Because we, ideologically, have an image in our mind of what a farm means. So when most people, it might not apply to you, but when most people draw a farm, they will draw something like this. It won't be as good as this, but they will draw something like this. In other words, an entirely free-range situation. So the animals will be scratching around in the dirt, they will be free, they will be in family units. They'll often be depicted in the books smiling, the farmers will be smiling, etc., etc. The interesting thing about that, in terms of the depiction of the farm in a modern setting, is this is completely divorced from reality. There are very few farms like that, but we do still have that type of idea in our mind. And so one interesting project for you, perhaps, is that, you know, what would it be if you were to say to people, mink are farmed in Ireland? What would they picture in their minds? Would they picture something like this, but rather than these animals, they would have minks instead? Would they picture that because of the word farm? Interesting idea, because this, of course, is the reality. This might be what they would not picture, in the sense that that's what usually happens with other animals too. People's representations of their animals are different from the reality, which is one of the problems for, obviously, animal advocates. Okay, let me just transfer you to YouTube then, if I can remember how to do this now. Okay, now I'm just going to show you a couple of minutes of this because you can't see it very well. Now, effectively, what happened here was somebody got into a mink farm as an observer or an assistant, and they had one of these secret cameras on them. So the people who you can, you might just be able to see, I'm just going to show you a few seconds of this. But effectively, what's going on here is that you've got cages of minks here, cages of minks here, and they're bringing a gas chamber through the shed, which is on wheels, and they're putting the mink into the gas chamber. Now, the law says that the gas chamber should be operational when the minks go into it. In actual fact, if you watch this entire film, you'll see that it's not turned on for the first few minutes, so there's 30 or 40 minks in there before they turn the gas on, which is actually illegal. So I just want to show you that just so you can get a flavour of what goes on in terms of slaughter of minks. There are different ways of slaughtering minks. Some people break their necks, some people electrocute them anally, and other people gas them. So if you can just see that, they're taking the minks out of the cages, and you'll see them swinging them into the gas chamber. Just showing another couple. So out of there into the gas chamber. That little motor you can hear is actually the gas chamber operating. Okay, which of you guys can help me get back to the search on YouTube?
Gavin.
Gavin.
Gavin, would you come
down?
Gavin. Okay, so this actually is this is a silent film, this one. Okay, so this is the outside part of where you saw the gas chamber bit was going through the middle of the shed. This is now seeing the outside of the sheds. So these are individual minks. Now, if you know anything about minks, you'll know that they're incredibly territorial as animals. In fact, they usually only come together in order to breed. Usually they're very solitary animals with a distinct territory which they will defend. So consequently, by putting them into this situation is obviously putting them into a very artificial one. Okay, you're putting territorial predators together in a very artificial situation. And so consequently, they become stressed. And there's lots and lots of research about the way that the minks become stressed. It's very similar to thinking about, if you've ever seen animals in circuses, you'll often, I don't know if you've ever seen elephants chained to the ground, you'll see them kind of rocking and moving. Yeah, this is a condition called stereotypies. Stereotypies, okay? Stereotyped behavior. And this in mink is classic behavior. In other words, they're completely stressed out, and they just run backwards and forwards in their cages for many hours in the day. There will also, so this is a kind of like a leaping up and down behavior. The other guy is kind of running backwards and forwards. So this, you know, the scientists tell us that this is a product of stress. And the stress is caused by the fact that they're in these farms. And it's as simple as that. Now, mink are semi-aquatic animals, which means that obviously they spend a lot of time in water. They have no access to water in mink farms apart from some water to drink. Yeah. In fact, you'll see a little later that you'll see some devices which are to provide water. How they feed mink is quite interesting. They usually have some kind of porridge type situation, and they will go along and they will just dollop it on top of the cages, and it drips through. It's like a slurry and a porridge made of bits and pieces of fishes, etc., etc.
Where are they from? What's the natural habitat like?
Say again?
What's the natural habitat like? Where are they from?
Where they're from?
Yeah.
You mean originally?
Yeah.
Well, mix are from North America. Yeah, so they're not indigenous to this country. Yeah. I mean, sometimes there's been cases where animal advocates have released mink. Kind of deliberate them, and that's caused some problems in the sense that they are not indigenous in the way that, say, otters would be. You know, so the ocean arguments about that. So this now is showing this container for the water. Now in Germany, they're starting to bring in legislation where minks have got to have access to some water where they can actually bathe in. And that seems to be virtually wiping out the mink industry in Germany because they can't meet that welfare standard. This is a very standard situation. The Irish situation is standard throughout the world. So you'll find mink farms like this all over the world. At the back of the cage, there's a small nesting box. And sometimes you'll see them running into that and then back out again. So as you can see, they're pretty close together. The reason that some of the cages are empty is the fact that they'd already started killing some of them. And so some of them have been taken for harvesting already. But generally speaking, in lots of times, you'll see an individual mink in each cage. Another problem, of course, is mating. Mating is difficult for minks. They are solitary beings. They only come together for mating. What they do in this situation, sometimes they artificially inseminate them, but generally speaking, what they will do is literally sling a female in with a male and let them get on with it. Because they're stressed out and because they're also very territorial, it's a very dangerous thing, especially for the female. It tends to be smaller than the male. Okay, so this film essentially will be showing much of that. So I'll let it play out, but what we wanted to do in terms of making ourselves available for you guys in terms of your project is, wash your eyes. What we wanted to do in terms of that was, for most of the session, probably to be a Q&A. So in terms of the project that you're doing, I know a few of you are doing it. What is it?
There's only six that are doing it. And okay. Part of the project is to raise awareness in general. So things like this.
And it's called Puppy Love, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that a set title or is that a title that?
It can change. It's just that can change.
Okay.
It's only,
yeah. So it's just a kind of guide thing, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. But I was just saying, you know, would that be set down in the curriculum?
No. They come up with them themselves. The other group is the U and Youth in India.
Yeah.
And the other one's Bully in the Box, but they come up with the titles themselves, isn't that bad?
So what's the Bully in the Box one then?
Bully in the Game.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Because that's
right. So who are the little group then doing the Puppy Love then?
Over here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing it as well, you're right.
I'd love to. Yeah.
So in terms of your project then, the reason that we're here essentially is to be able to help you from this moment on and going forward in terms of what you might want to do. So feel free to ask any questions and make any points, because the idea is that we're going to be useful to you rather than you just listen to me. Okay, so I mean, like, for example, what is the next part of the project? What's the next thing that's going to happen?
I want to
fundraising, okay. All right. And in relation, what, for a group or for yourself? Or? Okay, that's you. And there's animal education outreach as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that would be... So how long is this project going to go on for then? Few more months, okay. So you're going to fundraise what, for another month or so, and then turn your attention to what? What follows the fundraising?
To write out the
message. To write your report.
Okay, well, like, is it like a portfolio, or is it just a, it's just a report?
You can tell them a bit more about the report, maybe.
Yeah.
You were out that day. God, Kevin, you do.
And are you writing it... in a collaborative sense, or do you do it as individuals?
We're all doing it together, writing different aspects of the report. Some of us are writing on the teamwork, and then what we did, like, raise awareness generally. So, yeah.
Okay, and so in terms of the report as it stands now, you've just started it, essentially, is that right?
Yeah.
Or are you just researching for it? Okay. So where have you gone so far for research? I suppose it's been the internet, is it? Okay, and can you remember what you're focused on fur out of all the different uses? So where did that particular focus, that was like a joint decision between all of you, really?
For the speak out, well, you're going to do a drama, aren't you?
Yeah.
The drama is, it's only 2 minutes they get to show how they feel about the issue. I was thinking they could do something about the farm as well, like if they dress up like the ideal farm, like we were saying.
Oh, right,
and then
okay.
What's it really like?
Yeah.
They were going to dress up and do a drama too.
Yeah, well, there is obviously a pretty stark difference between what people have in their heads, you know. I mean, I don't know whether it will be true, because there's obviously an urban and rural divide here, in the sense that, going back to what I said about giving people a blank piece of paper and say, please draw me a farm. Now, obviously... people brought up on a farm, they know what they're doing, yeah. But it's the city people that might have much more of a disconnect. In fact, some of the research on children from city schools is fascinating, in the sense that there's one situation, this is English research, where a 12-year-old girl was asked how often she thought cows are milked, and she said she thought it must be about once a year. Yeah, and so there's quite a lot of ignorance. You know, if you hold up a packet of sausages and say, what's this? People say sausages and say, where does it come from?
Mm.
Yeah, and there is actually there's a kind of joke thing where this 5-year-old said to his mother, where do sausages come from?
Yeah,
and she said they come from pigs, and he got a bit stroppy and said, but where do they get them from? Okay. Because again, there's this disconnect in that sense. So a lot of people don't really know what they're eating in that sense. Okay, so
the horse burgers, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was. You know, they did a frontline program on Monday at the Pat Kenny Show on RTE. I was on that, but essentially they're boiling it down to the fact that they think it was just one burger now. But the one burger, it was about 29% horse. Yeah, so it's a really kind of weird thing. But we received an interesting document not long ago, which talks about the types of meat that have been imported into Ireland. There is about 1,000 euros worth of horse meat coming into Ireland on a kind of annual basis. But there are more than 100,000 tons of whale meat coming in. Don't know where it goes. And then there's quite a lot of reindeer meat that comes in. And did you say that we thought it might be IKEA that was taking that?
Well, IKEA were selling reindeer jerky.
Oh, were they? Okay.
Yeah, we stopped. Right.
Well,
I mean, that's not
really
the point.
Horse meat and dog food.
Yeah, horses, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Glue.
As you can. Like,
There are about six slaughterhouses in Ireland that kill horses.
I mean, you put them in a cage in the same conditions as the animals there, they're going to go mad.
Love the sausage sandwich.
And those animals feel the same way as the animals that are suffering. So it's the suffering we look at. That's why, like, we would be vegan.
Settle down, guys.
The three of us, or most people that would be connected with or care about animals, would be either vegetarian or vegan. And vegan means we don't use any animal produce at all. We don't eat it, we don't wear it, whatever. So,
plastic shoes.
We sort of practice what we preach because most people say, oh, I love animals, but it doesn't really mean much because they have maybe have the dog out the back garden, that they have a pig on the plate, and they have a big hanging up on their coat stand because they're wearing this. So you have to sort of be logical and consistent. If you do care about something, that's what we're here to do. Try and just make you think. I know to most of you, it's probably the furthest thing on your mind. You couldn't give a hoot, really. But most of you, if you start with an animal that you may have cared about at some stage in your life, maybe you could spread it out a bit. Like if you went out in the street and somebody came up to beat your dog, what would you do? Would you step in to save it?
You say you're lactose tolerant. You look a bit lactose tolerant, to be honest.
Okay, Adam. Guys, there's only one voice at any time, so we're going to hand over to Adam here.
You can care about an animal, but it's still end up like, if I had the chance, I'd probably eat it.
What did he say? He can care about it.
If it had the chance, it would eat you.
Like, if you're sure they had the animal starving, it would probably eat you. Like, same with dogs.
Do you know, I've got a question. Sometimes people feel very strongly when it comes to animals, but just say like abortion as well, maybe when it comes to the issue like killing a human being. And it's unusual actually, like, some people feel very strongly on one and not strongly on the other.
Single issues,
And it's because it's both still the same thing, you know.
But people will come up to the fur demo, let's say. We had a fur demo in town against fur just outside one of the fur shops. And people often come up to us and say that we support the fur anti-fur that you're against fur, but we won't support meat. We eat meat. So a lot of people just care about one issue with animals. And everybody's the same. All of you are the same, but your pets as well. You probably have an issue with pets. If somebody kicked your dog or kicked your cat, you'd have an issue with that. It'd be on your list, exactly. It'd be on your Christmas card list, you know.
That belongs to you.
Yeah, so that, we call that a... We call that a single issue. A single issue. So like anti-fur, the fur table that we have. A lot of people come over and say, we'll just support that. We don't care about anything else with animals. We just don't want people wearing them as fur coats. We will eat meat, you know, that's it. So a lot of people go for the single issue. Now with vegans, they go for all the issues. And basically they say if you can be compassionate about your pet, you can be compassionate about any animals for the fur, you can be compassionate about all animals.
Total extremists, really.
Extremists. So that's where the questions start to come. That's where people say, well, you know, yeah, I do care about my dog or my cat. I wouldn't wear it as a fur coat. But why should I care about the minks that are in the fur farms here? And these are kind of the questions that people ask us. What is it being vegan, you know? And bit by bit, people see, actually, it's just about compassion towards an animal. None of you would go and kick an animal, I don't think, or somebody would very quickly tell you. So that's what veganism basically is about.
There are some people who claim that they don't care at all what anyone would do to another animal. And is anybody in that category here that they think that you could do anything you want? You could put a kitten into a microwave, you can... because there are some people who they have a great deal of problem empathizing at all with other animals, And often they'll might actually have a great problem emphasizing with other people as well. In fact, there is research which is United States based, really. It's called the LINK. And police departments in the States take this very seriously. If they find people who are serially abusive towards other animals, they put them on a register, because there's often a case where, in fact, if you look at the history of all the most famous serial killers, they started by abusing animals first. And then if you like, they graduated when they moved up. So North American police departments take that very seriously. Not everywhere, because the LINK is a bit controversial. You know, in the sense that there are also quite a lot of people who've done some pretty nasty things to animals, and they never do anything to humans. But that LINK is certainly a research area, and something that's been established.
What if you need to kill animals as well?
Sorry, again?
What if you need to kill animals as well?
Well, the thing is, if you go back to the theory, rights theory will allow for something like self-defense. But then again, it would also apply to human rights. Because animal rights, the theory of animal rights, the philosophy, is based on some of the principles of human rights. And of course, thinking in terms of negative rights, in other words, your bodily integrity, so that means that because you have a right to bodily integrity, I have a duty to respect it. Yeah. But if you attacked me, or if I attacked you, you could defend yourself, even though we're both rights bearers. And if I was irrational and I wouldn't stop attacking you, you could kill me. Yeah. So self-defense is built into this idea anyway. So people say, well, you know, what if there was a plague of rats, and what if there was a plague of this, that, and the other? Well, we are allowed to defend ourselves, and by extension, we would be allowed to defend our food sources, you know, so long as we were reasonable about it. The animal rights case would be to suggest that we would have a different mindset by thinking of other animals as rights bearers as well as us. And that means then that if there are conflicts, which there will be, we would try to address those conflicts with that in mind, that we're all rights bearers, and not it's just that we're more important, that they're the one who've got to give way or whatever.
See, as a vegan, do you like eat eggs and
no.
milk?
Vegetarians would, vegans wouldn't.
So like, how do you survive? How do you get your protein, carbs,
vegetables?
Exactly, everything, basically. Everything else that's not an animal product.
Yeah, there are something like 77,000 edible plants available.
Calcium, protein, everything comes from plants.
I think edible plants are still like it.
That's it, but we just, you know...
Right, yeah,
sorry, Claire, yeah.
Because that's an interesting, I remember you had a
very interesting
leaflet.
Yeah.
Daniel has that.
A nutritional leaflet, yeah.
I remember I told the guys, well, for me, guys, can we just wish another second? In the Bible, I tell them, originally, you weren't allowed, God made animals not to be eaten. And then there was a stage in the Bible where he allowed animals to be killed for survival. But nowadays, if we don't need them to survive,
it's a choice.
We don't,
yeah, you've got a choice.
We can survive without. And originally, we were never supposed to harm the animals, and there was only a stage because we had to survive during
that is
some type of history.
As I understand it, I'm not a religious person, but as I understand it, when the ark came back down to earth, as it were, it is then when God said you can now eat animals because the plants have been destroyed.
Yeah.
But that begs the question: what do the animals eat?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's something to do. So what's the animal team?
Yeah, sorry.
Why are you going
to do a knit back together?
Well, it would be a you'd have a completely different process kind of situation there. Plus the fact that they will shear sheep, but they will also use sheep skin. Yeah, so that's a completely different. Obviously, you could shave them, but that would then mean you've got lots of mink hair. What do you do with it?
Yeah, it's not a fur coat. Yeah. Fur coat's the skin as well. Yeah. A lot of people don't know that.
I mean, essentially, a fur coat is almost like a leather coat with the hair still on it. Yeah.
And can I say, a lot of the collars that people wear in their coats, they think because they get them in cheap shops, that they're, and a lot of times it says artificial here, they think it's plastic. It's actually cat or dog from China or somewhere else. The shilling. No, that's bad. But
sheep, man.
Or in the up boots. You know up boots? Up boots are a number of different animals.
Up boots,
well, yeah.
All of them.
I don't know if all of them are.
Anyone?
Yeah. So a gentleman here had a good question about plants. Yourself.
How to survive, really? If you
basically
everything.
No, but one of the questions was, how can we eat plants? Do plants have feelings, or you know?
Essentially, you're also eating a living organism.
I think it was this gentleman here asking, wasn't it?
Plant
is a living
organism. Be quiet. A plant like lives and grows and eats as well. So technically, you're not actually. You're eating.
So are we harming a plant when we eat a plant? Is that the question? Or?
Yeah, but like you're eating a living organism.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
So what's our ethics about eating plants? Yeah. Is that the question? Yes. Yeah. Does anybody have an answer to that? Why can we? Why do we say it's not ethical to eat animals, but we say it's okay to eat plants? Plants don't feel pain. Yeah, there's a lot of experiments at the moment trying to say that they're sentient. You know what sentient means? Sentience. It basically means they're aware. They have awareness. Yeah. Animal. Yeah, and a lot of people say animals don't have awareness. They're like machines. They're just there for us to eat. And they don't have any awareness of what's going on. They don't feel pain. What would you think about that? Do you think animals feel pain?
Yeah.
Do you reckon? Do you think animals are aware? Are they afraid? If you chase it?
No.
Huh? You don't think?
When you try to chase a sheep, it chases you like.
But what about a plant or a cauliflower? If you chase a cauliflower or broccoli, will it run away? Huh?
What do we eat for breakfast?
Today I had a toast today.
So cereal? Fruit, everything most people eat for breakfast, actually. Huh? Soy milk, hazelnut milk, rice milk, much tastier than the milk that causes you all the problems, you know, diseases.
You know, you find nowadays there's like a vegan version of just about everything. You get vegan ice cream.
There's too much noise. So we'll just let somebody speak up or listen. And if you've got something to say, you can put your hand up and we'll give you your say as well. Okay, so we're just going to listen to Roger here first. Okay?
Now, I was just saying, just finishing off there, but there are kind of vegan versions of just about everything now. A lot of the people who go vegetarian and vegan first, they get into the kind of fake meat thing. And so there are, you know, the kind of Lindemann kind of sausage and this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
in North America, they're very big on the fake fur, the fake meat type stuff. It's not so much in Europe. And usually what tends to happen is that when people get into veganism, they kind of use less and less. But it's quite useful for a transition type thing, because the problem for veganism is not nutrition and it's not health. In fact, when the first people went vegan, they were told by everybody, including their vegetarian friends, that they were going to die. Right? It just so happens that veganism is one of the most healthy diets you can have. But that was a secondary thing, because they went vegan for ethical reasons. So they kind of risked it. You know, they were going to say, we'll take the health, you know, hit to do what was right, but it also happened to be that it was very healthy as well, you know, so it was like a win-win situation in the end, you know.
Are you a vegan
when you started?
I'm a vegan, yeah. I've been vegan since 1979.
Connor, is it?
When you started being a vegan, like,
I don't know, like, so did you feel like when you went on to, like, not eating more protein or anything, did you feel like not strong, like, did you feel like
No. That's kind of a myth, really. I mean, there are vegan bodybuilders. In fact, most of the those kind of extreme sports, there are a lot of vegans involved with that. You know, the people in Wales, for example, they kind of run to the top of each mountain in a thing. Well, the vegans tend to win that. There are those who do the I can't remember what it's called, but you know the kind of extreme sports when you kind of cycle for so long and then you swim for so long. And
triathlons.
All those kind of things. A lot of those are vegans, you know. Serena Williams now has adopted a plant-based diet because of the health situation. What was that chap, Carl Lewis, the sprinter? He was on a vegan diet when he was training. Mike Tyson is now on a plant-based diet.
Most athletes now are turning to a plant-based diet, you know.
So it's a bit of a myth that you can't get what you want, you know. Yeah.
Gorillas are vegans, you know.
and they don't miss the protein. Yeah, well, started, I lost loads of weight. Like, I was very overweight at the time, lost loads of weight, became much
healthier. No, I don't miss it at all.
And cured up on eating. Milk is one of the...
Yeah, it's a fair point. But I tend to tell myself a story and just say, you know, I haven't killed anyone, so that makes me feel good, so I don't miss it. Sell down, lads.
There they are. What's that, sorry?
What did you mean?
No, milk. I was saying milk is the cause of a lot of the diseases that we have in modern society today, you know? Yeah, absolutely. Diabetes, heart, you know, can be caused, one of the things it causes. But mostly, like, asthma, eczema. I drank a lot of milk when I was young, and I suffer greatly now for eczema and asthma, you know, because we're not used to it, our bodies can't take in
milk. Here's a good question for the class. Who would class the drinking of milk as a natural thing to do?
You drink it,
man. Okay, so... milk is for a baby.
So, if... If you've got a pregnant cow...
No. Your mother's milk. Yeah. But you're not a baby.
What is the milk being produced for?
Drinking milk.
Yeah, the calf. So milk really is calf food, right?
Milk is milk.
Yeah, milk is calf food because that's what it's for. A mother's milk is for her baby. So if it's rat milk or cat milk or human milk or cow milk, then the you know, I mean, for example, Do anybody here believe that cows give milk for life?
No, I don't.
No. Okay, so how do you get cows to give milk?
Guys, please, there's only one voice at any time. So we asked, he asked a question. And if you want to answer, if you just put your hand up. So once Adam's picked, we're listening to Adam now.
Okay.
No, that's not what happens.
Could they do that?
Does anybody else know how you get cows to give milk? Yeah, you pull on the udder. Settle down, lads. Hey. It is right. You pull on the udders to get the milk. But what will put the milk into the udder?
Hormones.
The thing that everyone is missing here is the fact that you need to be pregnant to lactate. Okay. So if you think about your mothers. Right? Before they were able to feed you, if they fed you, they had to be pregnant with you first.
Cow and gate, man.
Okay. Now, so this is how the cow milk situation comes about. We make the cow pregnant with the artificial insemination issue that I've shown you. Then we take the calf away because we want the milk. So essentially, we're kind of stealing it from the baby cow. Okay? Because milk is calf food. There's no way around that situation because that's what it's there for. What we tend to do is we kill them at birth, or we'll put them into what's called veal units, or we'll send them abroad into veal units, which are like, yeah. Did anybody know what veal is?
Do you know what veal is?
So it's the meat from calves rather than the meat from cows. Now there's a particular characteristic of veal. Does anybody know what that is?
It's very red.
No, it's very white. Yeah. Now essentially what they do is that they take the calf away from the mother and send them abroad and put them into crates where they feed them a less rich powdered milk. And essentially what they're doing is they wanted to create an anemic animal. And that means then that rather than the meat being red, we all know the phrase red meat, veal meat is white because it's from a sick, anemic animal. That is the actual selling point of it. You've got white veal, which is a sick, anemic baby, essentially, which we've taken away from the mother because then we want to take the... Now, there is a supplement issue in terms of a particular supplement vitamin called B12. Now, most people say that B12 just comes from meat. In actual fact, B12 is derived from bacteria. So vegans get their B12 from the same place as meat eaters get B12, which is essentially from bacteria. Now, the reason why there's a lot of bacteria in meat is because essentially meat is rotting flesh. So it means then there's bound to be quite a lot of bacteria in the entire kind of process of slaughtering an animal, freezing the carcass, defrosting and then cooking. Okay, there's a lot of bacteria involved in that situation. So B12 has always been an issue, and so most vegans will take a supplement which is created from the bacteria rather than going through the animal part of it. So, yeah. In fact, there is one of the first vegan companies was called Direct Foods, and that really is the philosophy of veganism. In other words, you eat food directly. So you eat plants directly. Because if you put plants through animals first, then the conversion rate is very poor. So if you're talking about prime steak, you might have to put something like 20 pounds of grain into a cow, and you get 1 pound of steak. The conversion rate is best with chicken meat. So it's something like 3-1. Now, the ramifications of that is that on this very day, and I always say this, the controversial thing to say about this point, is that also on 9/11, on this very day, something like 30,000 children will die of starvation-related issues. 30,000 died yesterday, and 30,000 will die tomorrow. And they're dying right now as we speak. Now, one of the issues about that, and the issue is called, it used to be called poverty and starvation, it's often called food security nowadays. One of those issues is that there is enough food for everyone, but not if we divert it to animals. So let me give you a scenario, let me see what you make of this. Say, for example, there was two big populations. One of them was human, and one of them was cattle. Which one of those populations is most important morally? In other words, which one should be fed and which one should be allowed to starve? What? Humans allowed to starve or humans fed? Fed. Okay. Now, what happens in reality is that the aid agencies will often have to bid against the agricultural industries for the grain. And the grain then is given to so-called livestock, yeah? Which means essentially then that we're taking food away from the starving to eat meat. I was saying about the 30,000 children, we could feed every one of them right now if we wanted to, but we choose not to. So when we go back to that scenario, it turns out that it's the other way round than everybody thinks, because we feed the cattle and let the children die. Now, everybody's morals will say it should be the way around, but it's never happens. You know? Interesting. Sorry? Yeah, there's a lot of politics involved, yeah. I mean, it's not just a question of, right, you know, I'm going to be vegan and I give all my grain away. It's more complicated than that. You've got global economics and agricultural situations.
Connor has a good question.
You've got population problems as well.
Well, ask Connor has a question. What
convinced you to go vegan? What made you go vegan?
Well, for me, it was ethics. There are different types of vegans, if you like. Some go vegan for environmental reasons. There are really good environmental arguments about going vegan. For example, if you eat a beef burger, you're consuming thousands of gallons and litres of water. You know, it's been estimated that a vegan could put their shower on and leave it on 24/7 all year and use less water than a meat eater, because it takes an extraordinary amount of water. Somebody did a calculation once that if you get a couple of beef burgers, the amount of water that is needed to create them, you could float a destroyer with them. Yeah. So there are environmental reasons why people go vegan. There are health reasons why people go vegan, because now it's been found to be a health thing. But there are also ethical vegans. The first vegans, and vegans didn't exist until 1944, so it's a new idea, you know. And so I went vegan in 1979, and I did it for the same reason as the original pioneers, for ethical reasons. And people said to me, it's probably not going to be very good for you. But I thought, well, I'll risk it for a biscuit. I always say, I'll risk it for a vegan biscuit. And so that's what I did, but it turned out okay.
Did you just wait for somebody and say that you wanted to be vegan?
Yeah, it was very quick for me. It's interesting, most people who are now vegan were vegetarian first. I tended not to do that. Yeah. In fact, there's a program that's still on the telly now. Anybody know John Craven's Newsround? Yeah? Yeah. John Craven's Newsround? Yeah. I was watching that in the 1970s with my young children at the time. And there was this guy who was a fisherman in the Orkneys, north of Scotland. And he said that the reason that we kill seals is because they're eating our fish. And I thought, what do you mean, our fish? That phrase didn't kind of work with me. Because I was thinking, well, surely all it means really is that the seals got to the fishes before you did. You know, so what's the big deal kind of thing. And so I started to I was still eating meat, but I started boycotting fishes. And then within 3 months, it kind of like, that doesn't make any sense. And so the logical consequence was veganism for me. So I avoided the vegetarian phase, which is a good thing, I tend to think.
Sometimes people just don't think about it. You don't, you know, it's just, if you're brought up as a child, you're eating meat, you're drinking milk, you don't know the facts behind it, or you just don't think about it.
That's what happens.
Well, I don't think it's quite right to say we don't care. I think if I put my sociologist head on for a little while, you know, there's a concept in sociology called socialization, and essentially, and schools are interesting in this concept, because most people are socialized first by their parents, obviously. You know, if you think of a newborn child, you've got a helpless being. In fact, human infants are particularly helpless. We all probably seen the documentaries where other animals, you know, come out of the womb and they're on the run because they need to do that to survive. A human child is pretty helpless, but they learn pretty quick, you know. But they learn from their parents, usually the mother. Yeah. So the mother is the significant other first in terms of socialization. You get to know what you know now first from your mother. And it's very basic stuff. How to go to the toilet, we had to learn that. Yeah. How to use knives and forks, we had to learn that. So the skills that we take for granted now, we learned. Along with the skills are the norms and the values that go along with them. In other words, the reasons why we do things. The reasons why we do things. Example of that would be, imagine somebody on a phone, and the child wants to talk to the parent, but the parent is on the phone to grandma. What would happen is, the parent would say to the child, you know, please be quiet for a while because I'm talking to grandma, and if you talk, I can't hear what grandma has got to say. So you're telling the child essentially to shut up. But you're also giving them the reason why, the values that go with it, okay? Now, we, in our families, are brought up within the norms and values of our families. Now, some people, and you'll all know this, just look around the room, some people have some pretty weird families. Now, what happens then is, I mean, I had a very weird family. What happens then is you end up in an education system, which is where you are now. Now, one job of the education system is to instill in you what's known as universal standards. Okay? So the standards that go on in this school are universal standards of conduct, behavior, ethics, etc. So even if you weren't taught that by your family, you will be taught that by your school. And in some sense, sociologically, the job of a school is to either reinforce what you learnt in your family or correct what you learnt in your family. Yeah.
An effort to correct.
Yes. I think this, I'll tell you in a minute, but this one over there. Say again? A fry. Well, I can have a fry.
I can have a fry, yeah. I had a fry last week, yeah. Frying things. Frying vegetables.
A fry as in like bacon or sausages.
Well, you see, that's the whole thing is that it's
well, we've had a question here about breakfast. You know, people think that there's a bit of deprivation now. You know, in terms of like a full Irish breakfast, right? Now, there are a lot of those things that rather there are kind of soya versions of those things. You can get soya sausages, you can get soya rashers, and you can get, you know, the hash browns are usually vegan in the first place, obviously the tomatoes, all that. So there is actually now, coming on market, something called the veg, which is an artificial egg, okay? Again, it's a North American thing, okay? But eventually, in a few years' time, we'll be able to get everything that you eat now a vegan version. And the reason this is becoming important is because the earth can't afford for you to carry on having the non-vegan versions, because the environment is at the state, some people claim, of collapse. Some people claim, if you go onto YouTube and you put in these two words, home project, and put home in capitals, you'll get a 90-minute documentary free, and you can watch that. And it's not an animal rights film, it's about the environment, and it's about our impact on the world. And our impact on the world in the last 50 years has been absolutely astonishing. You know, absolutely astonishing. In fact, you know, there's those things where they use the 24-hour clock, you know, and we only actually came into being, you know, a few seconds towards midnight, yeah. You know, and we've completely wrecked the place, you know. It's a bit like that Tommy Chin joke, I don't know if you know that, kind of let you know, we suddenly find that we're alone, so let's wreck the place. But that's essentially what we've done. And so if we want to row back from that, and in the Home Project, they're saying that our planet has got something like 10 years left. That means that you're not going to get to be parents, probably. You know? It means that the children now being born are not going to get the chance of being a parent. Unless we do something about it.
All right, we have a couple more questions. There's one over here and one back here. Right.
You mean in an emergency situation? I'd try my best not to. But it's the same argument as if you go down in a plane and the only meat you can have is somebody else, would you eat them? Now, your argument is, most people say we won't do it, but there are some real-life cases where people have eaten the bodies of people.
Rugby players went down in a plane.
Yeah, the famous Andy's one, but there's different moral situations there. For example, if somebody died, would you eat their flesh? Is one moral question. But also then, if somebody's about to die, would you kill them to eat their flesh, or would you just kill the weakest one? So those are different gradients of moral problems. Yeah. Sorry, I can't hear that.
Am I a vegan? Absolutely, do I not look like a vegan? Do they look healthier than me? Is that what you're saying? No, I am a vegan. Yeah, I'm a vegan.
And free.
Yes.
1983.
Yeah. We're still standing.
Yeah. Since that long.
Yeah. Well, I went vegetarian first.
Yeah.
I was actually brought up by a mother that worked in a butcher shop. I lived beside a slaughterhouse. Well, I always felt there's something not right. I don't know, I didn't really understand what I was feeling, but like,
yeah.
When the pigs used to escape, it was Donnelly's, you know, at Cork Street there?
Yeah.
Yeah. When the pigs used to get out, when I was young, I used to think, well, they got to the end of the road, they're free.
Yeah.
So even at that age, I think I was aware that I cared. You know what I mean? Whatever made me put that all together. So it was early 80s when I came across the Animal Rights Group. And sort of when I read the stuff and I said, this is, it clarified it. And I knew I put the dots together now. You can see the picture. So I went vegetarian first because I didn't really know about the dairy industry and the cruelty involved in that.
Yeah.
So when I did, I sort of went the whole hog, so to speak, and went vegan.
That's why this is so important.
Not vegan
phrase.
Yeah.
This whole thing, yeah. Well, this is, guys, this is why this session is important, raising awareness. A lot of the time, James, please. Okay? If you would do what I don't teach, so I'm not used to that. We'd be quiet, please. So it's awareness, because a lot of us just don't think about what we're doing on the daily basis, especially the normal things like eating meat, putting our milk in our cereal. A lot of people just don't think about those things. My sister turned vegetarian, but she saw animals being killed. So it's only when you see it happening that then it makes you think, uh-oh.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, when you actually see the slaughter, you'll never see it on TV programs.
You
never see it. So, and that's why the industries will never show it to you. They say slaughterhouses have no windows. Has anybody here ever seen a slaughterhouse? Yeah, you've seen one. Whereabouts was it? What? Kildare. There's one in Kildare. Were you inside the slaughterhouse?
I said, I work at the farm.
You work at the farm. So what was? How did it feel to be there? Everybody hear this? Sorry, what to say again? What's the smell like in there? And do you think the animals are going happily in there, or what?
They're not too bad. They're not being beef. Like over in America, they're beef cattle now. Here, they're not too bad.
And how do they kill them in the slaughterhouse?
It's electric gun.
It's electric gun, is it, to the head? And how do they keep them?
That's
they keep
only
them
a stun gun. They have their throat slit after that, don't they?
Yeah, when they're dead, yeah.
That's only the
bones. No. That's the myth. The thing is, all animals are slaughtered the same way, is that they're bled out while they're alive. Yeah, so that means that they are stoned, then they're shackled, and then they have their throats cut, but they're alive at that stage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, it's just that you said they were dead already, but... If they were dead already, they don't bleed out. So you need them to bleed out.
Yeah.
Yeah, your hand is
dead.
Would
you eat a sausage sandwich? Would you eat a sausage sandwich?
What do you think of the food chain?
The food chain is an interesting one, because when I visualise a chain, I tend to see it as a kind of circle or something that's going around cogs. Most people tend to see it. I was talking to Mitya about the food chain, and they said that you should envisage the food chain as kind of hanging down from the ceiling, and that we're at the top. Yeah. So I think that the food chain is a bit of a myth, in the sense that when we die, we're going to get eaten. You know, and so...
When we die, we go to the soil, in years and years...
And bacteria.
Yeah, that's right. So, it doesn't... You know, morally, I don't think the food chain means anything.
Not now.
No, I don't. Yeah. So that's what I think of it. It doesn't mean anything morally to me. Any other questions?
Okay, go ahead. We're just about to finish up, I think. Is it?
No.
Does anybody else have any other questions?
What about from the actual group that's doing the project? Anything we haven't covered yet?
The group, you could stay back for a couple of minutes. Just okay. From that, because you do have any questions that's on your mind.
That could be
good. Yeah. Okay, guys. Just before we finish up, can we give your attention to Verity just for a second, please?
Yeah. Could I just ask? It's just for our own curiosity. Has anything we said sort of got anybody thinking? Seriously, I don't mean like.
Yeah.
But like, what make you think a bit?
Oh, because I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Why
guys, please stop. We've asked you so many times.
It hasn't, because my ma is the exact same. Like, my ma doesn't eat meat at all.
Really?
So,
yeah.
So like, she's been trying to influence me to stop. But,
how's she been trying that?
Staring
at me.
Trying to sneak it into my food and stuff like that, and I've done it. I feel like myself as.
Wait a minute, wait,
there's
something talking over here. I'm trying to sneak what into your food, sorry.
Like corn and stuff, that's not happening.
You're sneaking vegetables into your meat food?
Yeah.
Really? Devious. Very devious, yeah.
And why do you think she tried to. Why is she vegan or vegetarian?
Because she read a book.
Because she cares about animals, basically, isn't it?
No, I don't know.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she read a book, and the book might turn her against it.
There's a very good film on YouTube. I'll give you one last one if anybody wants to take it down. It's the film that made me vegan, basically. I'm not vegan very long. That's why I'm the angry vegan. These are the nice vegans here, you know. But basically...
The sick vegan.
The sick vegan. I'm the one that they're always slagging, right? Basically, what it is, if you want to take this down, it's the best speech you've ever heard. Okay, now... Your teacher here, she's going to check this out just to make sure, and maybe she'll show it for the group if you want it. She's going to just have a wee look at it. So, but if you get a chance yourself on YouTube, it's got called The Best Speech Ever, It Made Me Vegan. It's by Gary Yorsky. That's spelled G-A-R-Y. Your as in your, Y-O-U-R. Off as in of, O-F. S-K-Y as in sky, yeah? Yorsky. And he basically sums it up better than I've ever heard anybody talk about. It's 1 hour long. It'll answer all the questions you have about veganism and not.
1 hour?
It's 1 hour.
How long are you vegan?
Me? I'm a vegan about 1 year, 5 years vegetarian. So I'm only a young fella.
We'll leave it at that. Okay, guys. Guys. Okay. Can we please give a round of applause for our speakers?